Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 24, recorded January 26th, 2010. Buonasera a tutti.
Good evening, everybody.
Welcome to another fun-filled episode.
We are going to start off this time answering a question. We had an email from Brad. Thank you for your email, Brad. He has a question. He has a friend who has a 10-gallon tank. It's a cool water tank. It doesn't have a heater in it. And it's having an ammonia spike. Now, in the tank, he has 5 ghost shrimp, a betta, 3 white clouds, and 3 pandacories. And his friend wanted to know if the molted shell from a ghost shrimp could cause an ammonia spike as it break down.
Okay, well, let's get on to that one. I would say that it's generally accepted that aquarium shrimp don't have much of an impact on the bioload of a tank in general, and I would tend to think that is including the exoskeletons that they frequently molt. I have never had a problem with that causing a decline in water quality. I don't tend to think that would be the issue. Now, a dead shrimp could certainly cause that problem, but I don't think an exoskeleton would do that. There's just not enough effect on the bioload. There obviously would be some, but I don't think it's going to be enough to be a big issue. So I would start to look at other causes. One thing, this being a cool water tanks do have sometimes an issue with the bacteria not reproducing quite as fast and therefore not dealing with quite as much ammonia as you would in a tropical tank. There's a fairly narrow band of optimal temperature for those bacteria. Of course, they work in a wide range of bacteria, a wide range of temperatures. Well, I'm just mixing up all my words tonight, huh? It's okay. They work in a fairly wide range, but there's an optimal range, and an unheated tank could be near the low end of that range where they really metabolize a lot of it. And then if you get too high, oxygen levels go down, the dissolved oxygen levels in the water go down, and you get the opposite problem because they need a lot of oxygen to deal with. But that could be an issue. I'm not saying that's necessarily an issue in this case. I would say the bioload in the tank with the inhabitants that were listed there, that's really pretty reasonable for the tank. But the key here is assuming that all of those inhabitants have been there for some time. Because let's say the corys and the white clouds were in there only and had been for some time. The tank's been cycled for several months. And then you decide to add the betta and the ghost shrimp. At that point, it's likely enough that you would get an ammonia spike, even when an established tank where you haven't been having any readable levels of ammonia for some time. If that's the case, though, since the bacteria are already there and they're just adjusting to new levels of waste products, then they usually bounce back and are able to handle it fairly fast. But that you may get a readable ammonia spike in that case. And if you have, or if your friend, Brad, has added any of these inhabitants recently, then I would look to that as the cause. Now, another issue is to look at the filtration in the tank. Different types of filters are much more efficient than others at maintaining a good bacterial population that metabolizes the ammonia and associated products. So, if there's one that really has some good surface area in the biomedia, and especially if it's one that allows a lot of oxygen flow, then you're obviously going to have a much better time cultivating the proper bacteria, and they're going to be able to metabolize this ammonia a lot faster. If you have one, on the other hand, that has minimal surface area and perhaps not as much provision for oxygen mixing with or coming into contact with the surface area where the bacteria are, then you're most likely to get an ammonia spike. And that also goes for the substrate in the tank, adding to the surface area to some degree. If you have a lot of gravel in the tank, enough gravel in the tank, I should say, that you're going to get some good surface area, then that can help. And a tank without any gravel might not be able to harbor quite as many. And so you think of the interplay between the filtration and substrate and how that surface area and oxygen is available for the bacteria, and think of that. And then those would be the main things that I would think of. Of course, a planted tank, if it's heavily planted, is going to be able to handle ammonia to a much greater degree than a non-planted tank. Similarly, a tank with some algal growth is going to be able to handle it better than one without, and so on. Now, we may not be able to determine what the effect is or what the cause of this ammonia spike is if it's not any of those causes, but you might consider getting one of the ammonia reducing products out there. There are several. Some of them you have to be careful not to overdose on them. Well, all of them you have to use according to the package directions, but some of them can really scavenge oxygen when they don't find enough ammonia in the tank. And so if you overdose, you can really drop your oxygen levels quickly, and to, of course, a devastating effect on your fish potentially. But there are some good ones out there, and they can help you sort of patch up the problem until you can find the source of it. One thing I didn't mention, actually, just check the filter pads and see if there's some food that got lodged there somehow. Sometimes that's enough to do it. And that might be enough to help until you were able to discover what the cause is.
So good luck.
Yeah, hopefully that helps. Let me know if there are any further questions relating to that or any further information that might help. This is an addendum that I added a little bit afterwards because I got another email from Brad who wanted to follow up explaining that someone else had been taking care of his friend's aquarium and that he suspected that overfeeding had possibly taken place. And that makes a lot of sense. Seems like having someone else take care of your tank can be quite dangerous unless they're an experienced aquarist with a good knowledge of the dangers of overfeeding. And I thought that might be a good time to bring up the pillbox method that's widely recommended. If you are going to have someone take care of your fish when you're gone, it's a good idea to separate the quantities of food for the fish into some sort of compartment, in the little week-long pill boxes with a compartment for each day of the week are pretty good because they're sealed off and they're fairly small, and it's hard to make a mistake with those. And so you can give those to someone and say one of these for each day of the week, and maybe put about half of the amount of food that you would actually feed your fish, because it's not going to hurt them to go on a little bit of caloric reduction while you're gone. In fact, I would say if you're going to be gone for 2 weeks or less, don't even have anybody feed your fish. I've done that many a time, and the fish are fine. I've never lost a fish due to that. And I did once lose a fish that was debatably due to someone overfeeding them, so I think it's safer to err on the side of caution and just don't have anybody feed your fish. But if you're going to be gone longer, or you have, you know, fry or something like that, then you need to separate the portions. And of course, fry need to eat more than once a day in general. But using that pill box and just putting a smaller amount of food than you'd normally use in there is one way to help prevent overfeeding and thus ammonia spikes like the one that Brad's friend experienced.
Okay, now we're going to talk about office tanks. Fish tanks in your office. And of course, the purpose of having a fish tank in an office can be a little bit different than having one at home. So, Russ, you want to tell us about that, the difference there?
Right. Well, in an office tank, part of the purpose that you have it, probably to help you relax a little bit in your office and bring something that's comfortable and familiar for you to your office. And it's also going to be for people who visit who might not, you know a lot about fish or anything, or be particularly interested in them. But you want something that can be kind of eye-catching, kind of a conversation piece, hopefully. Even though the main purpose is just for you to have some fish in your office, of course. But keep that in mind, because if you keep an obscure species that buries itself in the substrate all the time in your office, You know, it might not, people just kind of stare at your tank and wonder what you're doing with an empty tank in your office.
Oh, we should clarify too, when we say office tanks, we're meaning like in a single person office. We're not talking about like a dentist office
right.
kind of display tank. We're talking about in your office that you work at your desk at.
Right, in your cubicle or on your
that kind
your,
of
whatever,
tank.
The place of employment, but not necessarily for customers to be dealing with a whole lot, although
right.
they may see it as well. Anyway.
Okay. So tell us what experience you've had with office tanks.
Well, I think I've had about, let's see, 7 office tanks throughout my employed life in the various places that I have worked. In my first office tank was a 5-gallon tank, a small community. Not a whole lot of choice there, but with a few small fish. I had some white clouds and a couple of coolie loaches and so on in there. Then the next year I took those fish home and put in a 10-gallon with an African clawed frog in there, Neville. He was one of my first African clawed frogs years ago. And then the year after that I took Neville home and put in a 20-gallon. I had a Shubunkin goldfish in there. And then later took the goldfish home and raised convict cichlids in the tank, had them breeding at work, and that was kind of fun, both for me and people who would come by and see a swarm of little convict cichlids around the tank. And then we moved to Hawaii, so I didn't take my 20-gallon with me. But I soon set up a 10-gallon tank that I had some neon tetras in. And then the next year I traded that in for a 20-gallon for the neons. And then I brought the neons home and put white clouds in the 20-gallon there at work. It was a planted tank with CO2, and I had some interesting things going on with Pelia and some dwarf sag and some Java fern. And then, of course, I couldn't bring that back when we moved from Hawaii. And now I have a 5-gallon kind of nano-planted tank in my office.
Okay, so you've had quite a few different things and some different sizes there. Let's talk about the one that you've got right now.
Okay. How should we start? Perhaps we could go from the bottom up.
Let's go from the bottom up. That's a good idea. Let's talk about what you have for substrate.
Okay, substrate is pretty minimal in that tank. I've got a little bit of black gravel. And that's about it. It's just a very thin layer, probably less than 1/4 inch in there.
Does that make it easier to deal with cleaning since it's in your office? You don't have the python at work?
It can in some cases. Yeah, I just have a normal gravel washer, siphon-based gravel washer there, so didn't want to mess around too much. One issue, I think, with an office tank, depending on your job, you may not have a whole lot of time to maintain it, and I don't, and that's why I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible. So the substrate's not very fancy.
Okay. What plants do you have in there?
Well, since the substrate's not very fancy, I have to keep... my options are limited as far as plants. So I have things like Pelia, Java moss, Java fern, Anubias, and that's about it. And in fact...
That's a good variety, though.
Yeah, it's a good variety for really easy plants that don't require a decent, you know, substrate for some heavy root growth. I do have, I don't trim as often as I should, so I kind of have just a jungle that grows about halfway off the tank. It's almost uniform in height because, like I said, I don't have a whole lot of time, but it's kind of nice. I mean, the plants are all thriving. They're just not as well pruned as maybe I'd like them to be.
Okay, what kind of a fertilizer regimen do you give the plants?
Okay, this was a fertilizer regimen I got from one of our resources that's on the resources page, so check that out. About nano tanks, really small tanks. That's what nano means, of course, means dwarf. So it's used to mean small tanks. I think for a 5-gallon tank, I put about 1 milliliter of Seachem trace mineral mix and about the same quantity, about a milliliter of Seachem Flourish Excel every day that I work. And sometimes I'll only put the trace element mix in there every other day. I usually put the Excel in there every day, and then on weekends I don't put anything. And it works really well. The plants are doing very well on it.
Okay.
And it's really simple. That's the beauty. I have two little eyedroppers, one for the Excel and one for the trace element mix, and just suck it up and squirt it in
simple
once a day.
Simple is good for it work.
Yeah, it takes a couple of seconds every day, and that's it.
Okay, and what about the fauna?
Fun
part.
Yeah. Well, I've got an olive nerite in there for algae, which does pretty well. I get a little bit too much sunlight because I have kind of a southeast facing window in the room that will hit the fish tank in the evenings, and so I've put some aquarium background on the side that where the window is, and that helps keep algae at bay. But I also have an olive nerite in there. I've got some Taiwan blue shrimp in there as well, which help with the algae as well, and just kind of general cleanup. There are a couple of hitchhiker ram-torn snails in there, but not very many. And the star of the tank is a placat betta, one that I bought at a wholesaler shop, in fact, from a tank full of female bettas. And
it was labeled, actually, as a female betta.
Yes, it was, and it was trying to beat up the entire tank.
So we affectionately named it Beat Up the Whole World.
At least it's sometimes called that. Our kids love to call it that. And luckily, I mean, I prefer placat bettas, and so I'm glad to have this one. It's a very interesting color, in fact. It's got a white body with red and blue fins, so it's not going to win any prizes, you know, for show quality bettas. But it's a really nice looking betta, I think. And it's red, white, and blue, so that's kind of fun. I would have named it something patriotic, but it's, I don't know, it just didn't stick. So,
Well, you originally got it when we were setting up our betta sorority tank, which we also did a podcast on. And so the first few days we had it, we thought it was a female.
Oh, that's right.
So we named her Abigail because she was red, white, and blue, but... Then,
upon closer scrutiny and the beginnings of a bubble nest, we realized it needed to be removed. That's true. And so Abigail Adams wasn't going to work because it was a male. So
it got switched to Beat Up the Whole World.
Yeah.
Okay, what lighting do you have on the tank at work?
Just the stock lighting that came with the 5-gallon tank, which is rather ancient by now and has seen lots of different habitats, but I think the bulb is a 15 watt, and it's just a normal output fluorescent bulb. I think it's 15 watt. I think it's 6700 K Kelvin rating, the color temperature there. So it is ideal for growing plants. Of course, you wouldn't want to try to grow anything really high light with that kind of bulb because it's not a whole lot of wattage. Because the 2 watts per gallon rule is a very rough rule of thumb at best, and it kind of breaks down when you get to smaller tanks because a lot of light just kind of bounces out of the tank. So it's really not a ton of light, but it's great for what I've got in there.
Okay. How often do you do water changes?
Water changes once or twice a week, generally once, because, you know, like I said, I don't have a lot of time. And I have a normal gravel washer siphon with a turkey baster that I can stick in, get the siphon going, and I keep a plastic gallon jug in there that I fill up, and I empty into the toilet and fill up in the sink, not the other way around. And, you know, I have my dechlorinator there, and it works just fine. For heating, I do have a heater in there, keep the water at 78 degrees about, which is pretty good for a betta, maybe not entirely ideal, but I didn't want it to get it too high because then things like Pelia and Java moss don't do so well, so kept it a little low.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about your training regimen with Beat Up the Whole World?
Yeah, this is another thing. I have done a fair amount of operant conditioning with the various creatures, from budgies and rats to frogs and fish and cats and whatnot. At any rate, it's basically the idea of positive reinforcement. And so I read a couple of articles on how to apply this to fish some time ago, and one of those is listed in the resources page, as you may see if you check that out. But I have a little flashlight, the kind that's kind of the LED pocket one with the button that when you push it, the light turns on, and as soon as you let go, it turns off. You know, basically, I've got that in there. And I've got a little spoon, a little plastic spoon, where I can put the food. And I flash the light and drop a pellet in immediately afterwards whenever the fish does what I want it to do. So it was a simple matter to have the fish, whenever he approached my finger at the side of the glass, to flash the light and then drop a pellet in. Pretty soon, he would follow my finger anywhere around the tank, and he's now doing that very well. Some bettas will do that without a whole lot of encouragement. This betta did need some encouragement to figure out how to do it, but now he's doing it very reliably because he realizes he gets a treat, and as soon as the light flashes, you can see him dart up to the surface of the water because he knows what to expect. So I just really started that with him. I haven't gone much further than this targeting, but I'm working on reliability with the targeting and making sure he'll go to any part of the tank and making sure he'll do it quickly. And that's fun, and there are a lot more tricks that you can do beyond that too. So check out the resources page if you're interested in that.
Alrighty. Thank you for telling us about your groovy work tank.
Yeah. It's fun.
And if you guys have any experiences with groovy work tanks or anything you want to share with us, feel free to email it in.
Yeah. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.